out there, everybody, and welcome to Caffeination 483. We're calling the 4 Science Edition here at the Caffeination Podcast. Hopefully you are having a fantastic week. I know we are doing pretty good down here at the Caffeination HQ. We have a lot of fun stories to talk about, a couple little tiny changes in the way that we actually do the show, and other things that we're going to get out of the way up front and personal. But I got to tell you, Steve, I think we have a good show lined up. What do you think?
It looks very good for me.
So you had a couple stories coming in this week. I have a couple stuff, and we have a little bit of a change in the way we do business. Isn't that correct?
That is correct.
All right. You are, of course, listening to the Caffeination Podcast. We are the high-octane world of caffeine culture and technology news. You can find this website over at www.caffeination.com. That is caffeination.com, in case you couldn't spell. But then again, if you actually could spell, you'd probably go to the wrong website, and that's actually a coffee bar here in Philadelphia, if you spell caffeination correctly. But if you spell it the way that everybody would spell it and should spell it, then you end up here. But it was originally supposed to be the Caffeine Nation, people. Come on. All right. So, we have a lot of really fun content. We are a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. All of the member shows have agreed to create child-safe, family-friendly, and educational content. Everybody is listed over at techpodcasts.com. That is a wonderful place to go. If you have a tech-related show, I highly suggest you head on over there, as long as you have seven episodes in the can and you agree to keep a clean sheet in regards to child-safe content. You can really get in with a good group of people. It's wonderful to actually deal with people who are just as passionate about this topic as you are. The Caffeination is proudly sponsored by GoToMeeting. In business today, people are on the go. Whether they're working from home, a mobile office, or a hotel lobby, business gets done everywhere. And with everybody always on the go, it's almost impossible to get everybody in the same room for a meeting. That's why I recommend GoToMeeting by Citrix. Everyone can meet online no matter where you are and no matter what you're working on. GoToMeeting allows you to collaborate on documents in real time, just like you're sitting in the same room and anyone can attend. It's really easy. You can get started with GoToMeeting in simply minutes, and attendees only have to join with a click. Plus, you can hold as many online meetings as you want for as long as you need for a low, flat monthly fee. Free phone conferencing and voiceover IP are included. My listeners can try GoToMeeting free for 30 days. That's a month of unlimited online meetings free. Visit GoToMeeting.com and click the Try It Free button and enter the promo code podcast. That's GoToMeeting.com and the promo code PODCAST. I'd like to thank GoToMeeting for being a continued sponsor here at the Caffeination Podcast. They allow us to do all kinds of awesome and cool stuff that we keep trying to bring you here. One of the cool things that were recently changed is we have always had a mailing list here at the Caffeination, and how well I tended the mailing list was kind of an up and down kind of situation. Sometimes there would be an email sent out after every show. Other times, we would lose people off the subscribers list. It just wasn't done right, and I think I finally decided to do it seriously and do it professionally. So we went with a new service called MailChimp. They're not going to sell your content list to anybody. This is, I'm the only one who's actually managing it. It doesn't go beyond that. It's a wonderful service. I suggest you give it a shot. This is not sponsored by them or anything like that. It's just something really cool. So if you'd like to actually sign up to our mailing list, you can head on over to the Caffeination homepage, and there's a little link up at the top that says mailing list. Or you could just click on the link in the show notes. What you will get every time that we produce an episode is you will get a short little episode guide in your inbox, as well as two of the more interesting and awesome articles, little teasers for them, and then you'll get a little bit of information what you wouldn't get elsewhere. You're going to get the content that's coming up for next week. If we have any articles or any things that are on deck, you're going to find out about them first if you're on the newsletter. So you only need to give us your email address and your first name. We ask you a couple other things, but if you prefer not to say, no worries, no harm, no foul. So I think it's a relatively reasonable request, but I think that I think it's really worth it. You've been getting some of the ones recently.
Yes, I have.
So how do you compare the new stuff to the old stuff?
I think it's a little more how would you put it, organized. I think everything's easier to understand and see.
The other one just kind of looked like an email that I sent people and copy and pasted the show notes. This one really I at least feel has a more professional slant to it, has kind of a better way of representing the show as a whole. So
right.
So we're going to be continuing to do this. We're working really hard to make this show as good as it possibly can be. All right, we have a ton of content going up here, so we're going to just head on out there and get it all up. This is called the For Science Edition here because Steve and I have been playing Portal Co-op for the past about a week and a half, you'd say?
About a week and a half, 2 weeks.
Yeah, so we've been playing it on and off, and I've beaten the first player side of it. I refused to give the game to Steve until he had beaten the first version of Portal because he hadn't played it yet. You have beaten it?
I have beaten it, yes.
So now you get all the jokes that I've been saying that kind of just fell on deaf ears?
Yeah, I get them now. It's pretty funny now.
So the cake is a lie, correct?
The cake is not a lie. You do see the cake.
I know you see it, but you never get it.
Nah.
All right, so beyond all the cake and beyond all the funny little stuff, he's still working on some of the challenges, so he'll get back to us on all that. But
it's a pain.
It is a pain. But now the mechanics, as they're extended into the new game, I have like a full-on review of Portal 2 up there, and this is by somebody who has been a huge fan of the series for years near. So did we actually need a sequel? We talk a little bit about the good, the bad, and the ugly. I think the worst thing about the second one, without giving anything away on it, is that it's, even though the single-player version is twice as long as the first one, and the co-op player version is twice as long as the first one. So technically you're getting four times as much content for the same, you know, for the same kind of game. It almost felt too short. It felt like there was stuff missing just because it's such an enjoyable experience to play. And I think the co-op version really works. It really has a ton of interesting little ways in which you can literally throw your friend off a cliff. We had more than a few interesting interchanges the first couple days. You know, I would just accidentally put a portal underneath Steve as he was walking, and he'd fly off into space. You know, it's just one of those games where you really need to play it with a friend. This is not the game that you'd go online like Call of Duty. You don't plug the headset in there. You just, you know, it really helps to not only be in the room where you can actually walk up to the screen and tap it and say, "This, put the portal here. I want you to take the red portal and put it right here," and then they put it under your feet, and it's a longer thing, and every once in a while you actually deal with cooperation. And if you actually look at the one of the other TV spots, they talk about cooperation, and it's hilarious. I love the entire aesthetic of Portal, and it just to hit on a couple of the high points here, did there need to be a sequel? Yeah, this didn't break any of the continuity. What they did was they added stuff that you didn't see to the end of the first Portal. And again, if you haven't played it, we actually have links up there. If you'd like to support the podcast, you can click on one of them. It's the Amazon affiliate links for everything, but still. The only thing that I'm upset about Portal 2 is that it got discounted pretty quickly as soon as it debuted. So like they really kind of took it to the people who were loving the game.
Yeah.
And it went from $60, which I paid, down to $35 almost in a week.
Which is probably what I'll pay.
So Steve's going to pay $35, or I'm just going to lend him the game so he can play it until the download content, which is the other really cool thing. Valve has already said that they're going to be releasing downloadable content that's going to add in some of the stuff that I felt was missing, like the challenges and like a couple more maps and things like that, and hopefully even maybe the suction tubes and other things that they talked about in some of the lead up but didn't actually end up making it into the game. They're releasing this sometime in the summer, and they're doing it for free on Xbox 360, PlayStation 3. That is, if the PlayStation thing is back up and running by then, but we'll talk about that in a little bit. Also on the PC. So everybody's getting it. It's going to be free for everybody. It's just going to be fantastic all over. So what would you say is your first impression, since you've only played the co-op in Portal 2? What would you say is the best part about it?
Oh, you know what? It's got to be the teamwork. I mean, I think it's a lot of fun. You know, of course, you want to get the whole game done, but at the same time, you know, you have a little fun with it. You know, there's videos on YouTube, you'll find on YouTube, where you see people doing co-op, and the one player gets irritated because the other one's not paying attention or not doing what's being done.
I just happen to be playing with the worst Portal 2 player ever. So, yeah. It's wonderful. The only thing I could see them adding, which would be incredibly humorous, would be kind of a battle mode.
That would be fun.
It's completely against what Portal 2 is,
But if you could have, like, turrets or other stuff where you could all of a sudden just make the other person the target, where you could just shoot the portal right in front of them, where you had to navigate and somebody was, like, above there trying to put, like, pitfalls and stuff in their way. I really think that could be interesting. Who knows what will end up coming out, but I just wanted to share with the group. All right, then we have a couple, two little bits of artwork that are actually from the single-player game, but they're hilarious. They're things that Cave Johnson would say, and Steve doesn't know Cave yet, but we're gonna put him in here anyway. It's the best. My favorite quote's actually the little bold title for today's show. It's no hand holding here. It says, you know, people always talk about science being standing on the shoulders of giants. Well, we don't here at Aperture Science. We do it from scratch. No hand holding. And that's pretty much how we run this episode here. We kind of build it up, and we just sort of go. We don't actually learn anything from time to time. The first little sign they have is, remember, if a future you tries to warn you, don't listen. And then they have, science isn't about why, it's about why not. Two very, very wonderful little posters that are probably going to end up printed out and put on the office walls down here in the caffeination. Just because I love the entire aesthetic surrounding it. All right, up next we have the true DIY computer. Now, I like to think of myself as a do-it-yourselfer. You yourself are relatively handy with certain things. Not everything. I mean, I'm not handy with everything either. But
no, some things I can work with.
Yeah, I mean, both of us have the wonderful innate ability to take things apart like absolutely nobody's business. But putting it together again, that there's the rub.
That's the challenge.
But I think Steve Chamberlain has taken it to a whole new level. He's actually built his own computer. And I'm not talking about, like, you know, he went to Tiger Direct, Radio Shack, or whatever, and pulled parts in off the shelf. No, he actually wired together his own processor. Yes, it's only 8 bits, but this isn't an IBM. This isn't anything else. It can run basic programs, but he's calling it this Steve's Big Meso Wires, and I know that's a name that finds itself near and dear to your heart.
Yes.
So I think that's actually what you call your entertainment center. So Steve's Big Mess of Wires, it exists in a couple different areas, but this is really cool. There's actually, if you head on over to his page, it actually shows the computer playing chess. It shows all the diagrams of how he did it, which are gorgeous, by the way. And it's insane. It shows it playing chess. It shows it, you know, doing all these other different things. And you're like, wow, he actually built this computer, not just from scratch, but from chicken scratch. There was nothing. So if you go to bigmesowires.com, you'll find his how-to guide in case you feel like doing it. So you want to build your own computer?
I'm thinking about it now.
So you got a couple years in the bank? Because I think it took him a couple years to wire that. That was pretty cool, though.
I'll see if I can fit in my schedule.
All right, and going from the complete do-it-yourselfer guide to something a little bit more hands-off, but a little bit less, or no less awesome, we have the bento book. Now, for those of you who are unaware, a bento box is a self-contained lunch in Japan. I believe it's only in Japan. But it extends, the idea behind bento boxes extends beyond just lunch, and it extends beyond that. It also extends into, like, practices of design. And you know, one of the most famous implementations of it was Gar Reynolds and his book Presentation Zen, where he really honestly talks about having a bento box for a slide, and that's all it is. And he just talks about how you can compartmentalize things. It's really kind of an interesting read. But beyond all that, the bento book is a fascinating concept. Unfortunately, it doesn't exist. I would buy this. I don't know about you. This just looks fantastic.
It's a great concept.
It's everything in one. It is a laptop. It is a tablet. It is a phone. It's a solar charger and a solid state drive. So it's literally indestructible. But so the laptop screen sits where a normal laptop screen is. Then where you would expect the keyboard to be, that's where the wide format tablet is. And then where you'd expect the mouse pad to be, that's where your phone is. You can remove any one of these components. And then to the left of the phone is the solar panel, and to the right is the hard drive. You can remove any one of these components, and it syncs what you were doing on the system as a whole with itself, which is insane. So that means if you were reading the New York Times and you pulled out the tablet, you would have the page that you were reading on there right away. And it's It's kind of an interesting concept as a whole, but the thing that really caught my eye are some of the stuff at the bottom. It wasn't just a keyboard. It was, they turned it into a stylus, like a Wacom thing, where they actually were drawing on the screen, where they had the shortcuts for Photoshop built right into where the keys were. They said the problem and the limitations with laptops and computers today is that the keys never change. So if you wanted to change something as simple as languages, like we have a QWERTY keyboard named for the top keys, QWERTY. If you have a keyboard from Belgium or from France, you'd have an AZERTY keyboard. So it'd be AZERTY, which is kind of just insane. And it's just one of those things where you're like, wow. And they also had like a keyboard set up and everything. So I would love this, but I would be really afraid of the price.
Yeah, it seems like it'd be quite like a car payment.
Yeah, so I mean, depending on the kind of car you got, that could be quite a big one. All right, next up we got the HDTV Retro Game Fixer.
Right, and what this is if you ever played games back in the day, you know how the design was and how everything worked. And nowadays, the big problem is, you know, you don't get that feeling. And a lot of people, you know, when they play games now, if you go back and you want to play, you know, Super Mario, you know, the first one that ever came out, or Zelda, the games today, you know, don't have that feeling. And with all these HDTVs, you're not really going to see that. But this piece of machinery right here will help that indeed. It's actually called the SLG 3000. And what it is when you plug this into your HDTV, it will bring the picture as it was. And what I mean is, back in the day, all the TVs actually used what was called a CRT. Which basically was,
like a glass bubble that shot protons or something at it.
Right, something like that. And basically what it was, it gave the effect. It wasn't a full picture, but it made it look like it was a full picture.
Right, it would flicker at roughly like 60 hertz a second or something like that.
Right, I mean, it was a fuzzy, it looked a little fuzzy, but you know what? It was a good feeling, and you don't see that today, and
yeah, everything feels like you're there.
Yeah,
And the old games just, they weren't built to look that way. They look really weird.
Yeah, it's like, you can tell, you know.
It's the same thing, like, if you're watching a DVD or a VHS tape, and you remember it looking a lot better than it does when you put it on the TV now, you're like, oh my god, this is horrible.
Yeah, I mean, if cartoons
are jittery.
Right, I mean, you look at Rocky, you know, today, and Rocky back in the day, you're like, wow, it looks a lot better today than it did back then.
Yeah. So, this thing basically, unfortunately, the one limitation I saw is that it only works if your HDTV has a VGA port. So, if you have a port that you were used to seeing on the back of your laptop for plugging a monitor in or your computer, then it somehow uses that to generate the actual scan lines, and it can actually do it for a couple different things.
Right.
So it's cool. It's just, man, it's. I think they said it was somewhere around $200, or I don't even know.
Yeah, but for that price, I don't think I want to play Mario on HDTV.
No, I'd rather just buy the new updated version, because that's the other thing people like Nintendo are doing. They're releasing new versions of the games that take into account the fact that you're playing it on a pretty monitor. So
right.
All right, next little thing we got here is the TomTom GPS data. It's a police wonderland. TomTom, the company kind of like Garmin and all the Magellan and all the different things that are out there, basically they have a huge data set. They've been tracking where all of their customers were going, because basically you triangulate to their satellites and they know where you are. It's stored on your devices, and if the device gets synced back up to something, then they have a full data set. Basically, a list of everywhere you've been on your trip for that day, if you were to do it per day, or everywhere you've been for your trip for quite a while. I mean, I know on our GPS, like if you open it, there's the trip that we took down to South Carolina, there's the multiple different trips to the different shore points, there's all these different things that are stored in the GPS. And it was just kind of crazy to see that, and it, you know, like, wow, this thing knows where I've been. TomTom is selling those data sets. Now, they're saying that they're anonymizing them, but we'll get to that in a minute. They're selling those data sets to marketers and to police departments, and so that the police departments can actually set up speed traps where they know people are going to be speeding. How long before we actually get to something where they just give you a ticket in the mail because they have your GPS data and say, yeah, sorry, you were doing 86 in a 45 zone? So it's not because you got caught or anything. It's just because they're looking for that next little ticket. They're looking for that next little revenue stream. And they're saying that they're anonymizing the data. Well, that's great, but the problem is that you still had to create it. So if Steve went to the bank, and then Steve went to work, and then Steve came home, and he stopped somewhere else along the way, that thing would have all that data in a row. So even if they took Steve's name out of it, they say, okay, user X went to the bank. All right, well, let's see. We're the cops. We're going to go to the bank, and we're going to find out who went to the bank at this point in time. Oh, guess what? Somebody named Steve just pulled something out at 4:44 p.m., and that just so happens to be when they had the GPS data from. I mean, this stuff is really exact. It's pretty scary when you think about it. This is why people were getting so upset about the iPhone stuff, where the iPhone was tracking where you had been since you installed the iOS 4. I mean, Google at least gives you the ability to turn it off, and they're very upfront. They said, look, you're sending anonymous usage statistics. We're keeping track of all your tower visits and all the Wi-Fi networks that you're around, and they let you know. You can't get past the first page without finding out that they're doing that. And if you turn it off, it stays off. If you turn off Apple's, it stays on. Well, this is the problem with the TomTom stuff, is that people never gave their consent to have these data sets sent. And there's a lot of really big problems about anonymous data, like I was talking about. So would you feel comfortable having your data set out there?
No, not at all.
Would you feel comfortable about cops setting speed traps to where you you have a little bit of a lead foot?
Well, if they did that, I probably wouldn't have a license right now.
I know I would like to say that, yes, I obey the law at all times. But, you know, if you're driving really late at night, like I know you do, or if you're driving at other points in time where there's nobody on the road, or you're just following traffic, I mean, we live near 95. I mean, 95, that's not the speed limit, but, you know, sometimes it can get up close to there. And it's not like you're passing people and going crazy. It's, you know, the overarching protection racket that people have for red light cameras and all this other stuff, it needs to stop. There's a lot more of a rant in the article overall. I'm really interested to hear what other people think about this. Hey, maybe I'm completely wrong. All right, now, Mother's Day just passed. We're switching gears rather drastically here. But not so much a rant, but kind of a really cool thing. Now, flower vases are kind of a dime a dozen. Literally every time you order something from 1-800-Flowers or wherever else, they send you a new vase, and the vase is always the same thing. And it's like, okay, well, what about a high-tech digital vase, to where if you have somebody else who lives in a different area completely, you could buy them the vase, and that way when you put fresh cut flowers in there, when you have that fun little experience of going out into your yard and pulling a flower out and dropping it in there, you know, it would show up in their thing along with whatever message you had with it. It's a 3D scanner and a 3D projector. I don't know about you, but when I was a kid, I would always bring my mom home like dandelions or other stuff. It's like, hey, you know, look at this flower I got for you. I'd pick like a rose or something out of somebody's garden, and it's like you present it. And when you're a little kid, that's like the coolest thing in the world you can do. That right there is the most beautiful flower you ever saw. And to be able to do that when you're a grown person, to be able to, you know, give your mom this vase, and then all of a sudden someday, she would just see, like, you know, like a handful of buttercups or something in there. I think that would just be really cool.
I think it would, yeah.
So, I mean, again, this is another design concept, and unfortunately we don't really have anything to go on yet. But the interesting and kind of sad thing about it is that the flower actually wilts in real time between the two things. So if you put a dead flower in there, you know, like, if you're in the mafia family and somebody puts like the head of the horse in one, you get a head of a horse showing up digitally in the other. So it could turn out a little uncopacetic, but still. All right, next little item we got for you here is...
Next is actually Angry Birds Assemble. And this is basically a design by an artist by the name of Dave Mott. And it basically entails to, you know, comic books. You have six different superheroes. You know, you got the Hulk, Iron Man, Captain America, Thor, Daredevil, and you know what? I'll be honest with you. I don't know the other two.
I think one of them is... Oh. Oh, wait a minute. I have no clue who that one is. One of them is Ant-Man. I think the one on the bottom is supposed to be Ant-Man. And the one on the top is, I can't remember her name, Wasp, maybe?
Okay, well.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a great design. I mean, it shows, you know, how popular the Angry Birds, you know, is actually getting.
I love that they used a pig for the Hulk.
Yeah, of course.
So that's all it is. It's a fun little one-off design that we found while we were surfing around the internet. Next little thing we got for you here is a wonderful story with a little bit of a sad, poignant part of it. James Hance is the guy who did the book Wookiee the Chew, and I bought it for my son. I bought it for my really good friend Dave when he and his wife had a baby recently, and it's insane. It's the perfect merger of two unbelievable parts. It's on one hand, it looks like a Winnie the Pooh book, and on the other hand, it's Star Wars iconography associated with it. So you have Han Solo dragging a stuffed Wookiee up the stairs like Christopher Robin dragging a Pooh. And it's just really cool, really cute, and it's relentlessly cheerful art. That's what James goes by. He has a lot of stuff. I think he just released something where it's actually Where the Wild Things Are, but it's done in a theme of Star Wars. And that's just so fantastic and so cool. However, unfortunately, James is not incredibly cheerful right now. His daughter, Maddie, is actually suffering from a very rare intestinal disorder. And he's trying to raise money to send her to Boston to get treatment. And anybody who has kids or anybody who knows young kids or is closely associated with them, your heart breaks for somebody else who has this happen to them. So he is currently selling and using all of the proceeds from his books and other things to help fund this. And he's have his auctions. He did wood burning art. There's a whole bunch of really interesting stuff that he has up there. So if you get a chance, you should go on over to jameshance.com. That's jameshance.com. The Wookiee the Chew book is a really cute book, and it's only $5. I can't believe he's selling this thing for only $5. And there's a lot of other stuff over there as well. You can get prints, you can get a whole bunch of other different things, but my heart breaks for what they're experiencing, but it's you can only do so much, so it's wonderful that he's putting himself out there like this, and I really, our thoughts are with him and his family. The next little thing we have, kind of switching things up again, is...
It would actually be a bulletproof clipboard, and what this is another, nice idea of inventions, and basically what it is you take a sheet of body armor, flatten it out, and you screw in a holder for paper, and there you go. And this actually works for a lot of different places. Either you're in a really tough situation in the in a bad part of the neighborhood if you're a doctor, or even if you're just in a bad meeting that you think will go wrong. It wouldn't hurt to have this with you. I mean, for $45, it's not that bad. But
could you imagine the Secret Service using these, and all of a sudden nobody realizes it, and they have a sheet of body armor just holding that in front of them? It's this is your Captain America shield for the corporate world.
Yeah. But yeah, it's a great concept. I mean, I don't know if you'll actually ever see it out. I don't think you'll see it in the corporate world. But it's a nice idea.
I you can buy it from ThinkGeek, which is the scary part. It's out of stock right now, so I don't think it comes with the handgun, but it can actually stop a 9mm round.
Wow.
That's no fooling.
Yeah, you ain't kidding.
And I think, when the cops are out there and they're writing tickets and everything, instead of having that the metal box that they keep all the tickets in, perhaps they should use one of these as well.
That's a great idea.
So it's pretty crazy. They actually have images over at ThinkGeek. This is a slab of level 2 body armor. I'm not even entirely sure exactly what that means, but it weighs 3 pounds. This clipboard weighs 3 pounds.
Oh my God.
So you get your work out and get your work on.
All right, and next we have what is called the Judas of Anonymous. And what this is about is basically, everybody knows about the PlayStation Network being offline. It's been offline for quite a bit of time now, a little longer than it actually should be. And
a lot longer than it actually should be.
And what Sony did, first off, was they started pointing to anybody they possibly could to find out who hacked it. And they pointed the fingers right at a team of hackers who call themselves Anonymous, which are very famous in the computer world. And the only reason they started pointing fingers at them is because it wasn't the first time Sony was hit by these people. They also went after Sony because of a gentleman by the name of George Hotz, which hacked his PlayStation 3. And not only did that, but he recorded the whole process on his blog site. And so Anonymous, you know, retaliated against him on his side.
And yeah, I think Sony shut him down or something like that, yeah, or sued him.
He's in big trouble with that, and so they figured if they did it once, they would have done it again. Unfortunately, Anonymous did everything they can to convince Sony that it wasn't them. They did like the idea, but you know, I don't think they would have went that far.
Everything that Anonymous has done up until this point, like, I mean, they've kind of been around for a little while in a weird nebulous state, but everything that they've done has been, it's immediate impact. They've never stolen stuff to sell later.
Right. What they do is they shut it down. You know, they make you, you know, feel the problem.
Yeah. It's a denial of service attack. That's their favorite thing. I think in the article you have something about the low orbit ion cannon, their favorite little script kiddie toy. And, basically, it's a freeware program. Anybody can download this thing. And just as long as you follow the instructions and hit who they want to hit, if you have maybe four or five hackers who know what they're doing, and then 60 people who think they're hackers who download the program and just go give it what for, you're going to bring a site down. But if you have hundreds of people who know what they're doing, and you have thousands of people who wish they did and download the program, you're going to have a huge problem. And yeah, that's what happened to MasterCard, or not, it wasn't MasterCard, it might have been American Express, but Anonymous lashed out on behest of WikiLeaks before. I mean, they've done a lot of really proactive and kind of pro-internet things, so this would kind of be almost completely antithetical to what they had done.
Right. I mean, it would be off the wall. It's not who they are. The details of the whole situation gets pretty complex, so if you want to read more into it, stop by the post.
Yeah, we have a link up in the show notes about the whole thing, so you can really kind of get into depth. And even then, in the show notes, we didn't hit all the major points, because I think there's something like a 14 or a 15-page manifesto that they published about this whole thing. So there's a lot of information out there.
Right.
So if you really want to learn about it, you can. But if you just want to know, it's like, wow, that they're basically not claiming responsibility, and they've never had problems claiming responsibility before. Yep, it's us. Nope, it's not. You pretty much take them at face value on that. All right, next little tidbit we got going for you here.
We're going to stick with Sony, and are they coming? They say they're coming back. Psych. And what I mean by that is, you know, with Sony being out for over 3 weeks, you know, they're batting back and forth between trying to come back, and one of their main problems is they're being vague. They're not telling you, you know, what actually happened. You know, they're not telling you this is how we're going to fix it. And you know what they're doing is, you know, what I just discussed was they're pointing fingers, and they're pointing fingers at a group, at the group Anonymous, and with a statement from Anonymous, they basically went into detail about everything that they do and everything that, you know, has happened. And basically, you know, with them begging and pleading again, you know, this happened yesterday. The senior director, Patrick Siebold, basically issued another statement asking, you know, saying, "We appreciate your patience. You know, please give us more time. It should be a few more days."
I think they even came out with a statement later on today, after you wrote this article, which was written today, and said that it might be the end of the month that it actually comes online.
And that's the problem, you know. They don't know. They're trying to fix it without telling you how they're doing it.
Yeah.
And I think in the end, you know, if they don't, you know, start going into detail about things and explain, you know, if you hold out, this is what we're going to do for you. you know, they're going to lose a lot of people. The faith of the PSN will be declining.
Yeah, they actually did say something, again, I think in the same press release, where they might be giving free games to people if they stick around, but they might be, and only for people who are affected a certain extent. And it's like, this is going to be a poster child for how not to handle a PR nightmare,
right,
going forward. It's pretty sad. And it's funny because on Twitter this past week, somebody said, hey, you know, PlayStation Online is its own kind of joke right now, because it's not. And I said, yeah, you know what? I actually think Microsoft is selling them the lucrative Microsoft Works joke line. So, because that pretty much, if you were around in the late 90s when Microsoft's productivity application was called Works, all you had to do was say Microsoft Works, and somebody else would say, no, it doesn't. So, yeah, PlayStation Online, not so much. So, all right, next little thing, the last little tidbit in the Geekcraft section here is Microsoft buys Skype for $8.5 billion. Now, there's been some jokes going around with all Microsoft's .NET certification and everything, where they're actually saying, hey, you know what, with Skype and Microsoft.NET, you could have Skynet, and then we'd all have Terminators running around with really good phone connections. So I actually do kind of feel bad for Skype. They've jumped around from company to company. And I don't know if you know this, but the people who founded Skype are actually the people who founded, I think it was either Napster or Kazaa.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because the root of Skype's infrastructure is actually a file sharing network.
Oh, wow.
So it's pretty crazy because it's a lot of decentralized communication. And when they were bought by eBay way back in the day, I said that this was an absolute horrible purchase. I think they were bought for something like $20 million or $20 billion, whatever the valuations were going back then. And it never seemed right. They're like, oh, yeah, this will let customers talk to each other. I don't want to talk to the person who just sold me that crap. I just want to go. I just want to buy it and get it. I mean, if you could send the package via Skype, that would be a little bit easier. I mean, it would make more sense for eBay to try and buy UPS or try and buy FedEx than it would be for them to buy Skype.
Right.
However, Microsoft buying Skype makes a lot of sense, a sick lot of sense, because now Skype, they've already announced that Skype is coming for the Xbox 360 and the Kinect. You're going to be able to do video calls with motion tracking from your Xbox with the Kinect. You're going to be able to immediately do it from your Windows phones. The only thing people are a little worried about is the cross-browser compatibility going forward. Is it still going to work on my Android phone? Is it still going to work on the iPhone? Yeah, it's going to work on the iPhone. Everything has to work on the iPhone or people start throwing a snit fit. But is it still going to work on Apple products in general? There's no way of knowing. So it's going to be interesting to see where this all goes. All right, now we have the next little thing that we got going for you here is the food and caffeinated bits a little bit, and then we're going to head you out on your way. Up first is my favorite article. I was literally bursting at the seams to put this out there. I moved like 15 other things around just so that this article would come out today so I could talk about it. This is Il Toro. This is a design concept. It is a portable espresso machine with 3 shots. Now, if you want to, you could go The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly on it. I think that's was that the movie that it's from? The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly?
Yes.
Okay. Steve and his family are very big Clint Eastwood people, but still.
That's right.
Did he fire 3 shots or only 2? Well, to tell you the truth, in all this excitement, I kind of lost track myself. But being that this is an Il Toro, the most powerful handgun espresso maker in the world, and would blow your head clean off, you've got to ask yourself one question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, punk? You have to say it that way. This thing does everything when it comes to espresso. Supposedly, again, this is just, unfortunately, a design concept. My biggest problem with the MyPressi Twist was the fact that you had to put hot water in. So if you're pouring hot water into a portable espresso machine, it does not mean you can take it camping because you would have to bring the hot water with you. This takes cold water, puts it in the handle, heats it up as it goes up into the chamber. You put full high ground beans up in the top, not some junky pocket or pad or pod or anything. It grinds them, it puts them into the place, it tamps them, and then yes, there are 3 shot containers that it actually does. So yes, you can actually do multiple shots with one thing. This is the perfect portable espresso machine. Somebody needs to make this now. I mean, you don't even drink coffee and this looks pretty cool.
That looks pretty, yeah.
And the first thing that I thought of when I saw this is definitely a, I think it, never mind, it was Dirty Harry. It wasn't, this is definitely a Dirty Harry moment. So, it was Dirty Harry, not that, some Clint Eastwood fan you are.
It's a fail.
All right, epic fail. All right, next thing we have up here is Tara from Coffee Home Direct has a wonderful little article on coffee for camping, and she talks all about the different ways in which you can actually make camp coffee. So the preferred method, if you have the French press, we've been rocking the French press around here. I am currently caffeinated with a boatload of French press coffee.
I'm out.
Steve was caffeinated with his stereotypical and standard sugared up iced tea. And I have the full French press down here, so I'm all right. The Mocha Pot's another very famous one that people use. Then you have the hand presso espresso, which actually it doesn't use the cartridges like the MyPressi Twist. You can actually pump it up and pump up your jam, if you will, but you still have to add hot water to it.
It's like a super soaker.
Yeah, it's the super soaker for coffee. And then, of course, there's the good old-fashioned method of making camping coffee, which I absolutely love. This is, you boil a pot of water on the fire, you throw in a handful of coffee grounds, and you just let it swirl around there, getting all good and fun. And then you're just there. So it's interesting. It all depends on how much stuff you want to bring with you. But I will, however, say that when you're bringing a French press, when you're bringing it camping, I would highly suggest the plastic version, because I've broken many a coffee carafe. So I usually rock the camp coffee, and people kind of get a little disgusted. What do you mean it has grounds in it? Yeah, just deal with it. All right, and then the next little thing that we got for you here is a French press to go, the review of Express. Now, you need to express yourself, but over at the Daily Shot of Coffee, Mike Crimmins has a fascinating little review about this disposable French press. I've seen a lot of bad things about this in the press. I'm not even going to lie. The biggest problem facing coffee today, the biggest problem facing a lot of the different retailers out there, is that people are much more ecologically minded about things. And the idea of disposable cups alone really kind of rankles some people. Like, you know, we should be getting away from them completely. Everybody should have their own travel mug. Yes, I understand everybody should have their own travel mug, but it's not really a reality yet. Or it's not a reality where you go out there and you actually hand it to somebody and they'll fill it for you. But taking that one step further and adding an extra layer of junk to be thrown out with your coffee, I'm sorry, I really don't think this is a good idea. I like the idea, but then again, you know, I love my French press. I would much rather have a real, honest-to-goodness French press than have anything else. So, you know, this has a ton of design flaws, and all of them are inherent in the actual French press itself. Like, if you leave the coffee and the water in the French press, guess what? It's going to get bitter. So if you have to kind of extract it and then pour it right out. So, I don't know, but I would love for them to take this smaller version of the French press and actually make it a little bit more permanent. Go to a ceramic cup like Mike suggests. Go to, you know, metal filters instead of the plastic. I just think it needs to happen, so. All right, that about wraps it up here today for the Caffeination episode number 483 for science. So, all right, everybody out there, you should go out, buy Portal, buy something to play it on, and go play it, because you need to play this game. It's fantastic. It's just kind of taken over my mind completely. All right, so in signing off, this has been Paul and Steve, and...
I got nothing.
You got nothing left over there? Just... All right, before we lose too much whatever's left of our sanity, we're just going to sign off here. Thank you ever so much for listening, and stay caffeinated, people.